This message comes from NPR sponsor Planet Oat. No deep thinking here. Planet Oat oat milk is rich, creamy, and an excellent source of calcium with vitamins A and D. Also, Planet Oat's unsweetened varieties have 0 grams of sugar. Visit planetoat.com for more.
You're listening to Shortwave from NPR. On clear days between October and April in Texas's Big Thicket National Preserve, you can spot groups of researchers wandering the trails.
We leave early in the morning, about 8, drive for about 2 hours until we get to Big Thicket.
That's Adela Oliva Chavez. She's a medical entomologist, a field all about the tiny critters that make us sick. And she wears a pretty specific outfit to hunt for her favorite arachnid, ticks.
We are wearing light clothes, so something white, something peach, like a light color, so that if by any chance we get any ticks crawling on us, we can see them.
As they walk through the preserve, they do something called dragging.
So we come with a piece of white cloth that is attached to a piece of wood. It's being dragged on the floor, so it's on the vegetation, on top of the vegetation, and it just passes and brushes through. We count to 10 or 100. While we walk, stop and check if we have an adult tick. We put it in a vial containing a solution that preserves DNA and RNA.
Adela's fascination with ticks began early in her life.
I grew up in a farm, in a cattle farm in Honduras, and in the cattle, you see a lot of the ticks, and also in people. When I was a kid, my twin sister actually fell ill.
At the time, doctors didn't know what was making her sister sick. They later determined she had a vector-borne disease, meaning it was transmitted from something like a tick or a mosquito. Adela's sister got better with antibiotics, but the experience stuck with Adela. She dedicated her career to studying these kinds of diseases to prevent this kind of thing from happening to more families.
They actually have such a big impact in the livelihood of the farmers and also like people getting sick with diseases that cannot be diagnosed because nobody knows what they are.
Today on the show, we revisit a researcher's quest for accessible solutions for Lyme and other tick-related diseases. I'm Regina Barber, and you're listening to Shortwave, the daily science podcast from NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, VCU Massey Comprehensive Cancer Center. Every year, millions of people lose someone to cancer. But as an NCI-designated comprehensive cancer center ranked in the country's top 4%, VCU Massey Comprehensive Cancer Center is unrelenting in finding new ways to understand, detect, treat, and prevent cancer. Unconditionally committed to keeping loved ones in their lives. Learn more at MasseyCancerCenter.org/comprehensive. Support for NPR and the following message come from Indeed. When it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Get a $75 sponsored job credit at Indeed.com/shortwave. Terms and conditions apply.
In this country, more than 2 local newspapers are closing down each week. As news deserts grow, public radio is a lifeline for staying informed. Keep that service strong with a donation to the NPR network at donate.npr.org. And thank you.
So first, let's talk about what's happening with ticks in the wild. There are many different kinds of ticks around the world, and only a few species suck on us humans and spread disease.
In the case of the United States, the most prevalent vector-borne diseases are tick-borne diseases. From those, the most commonly diagnosed disease here in the United States is Lyme disease.
Lyme disease is generally found in black-legged, aka deer ticks, in the eastern half of the U.S. Once an infected tick bites another animal, like a human, it takes about a day for the bacteria to spread, though ticks can suck out nutrients much longer than that.
Ticks feed on you for up to 7 days and just stay there until they get completely engorged.
For reference, they start as small as a poppy seed and feed up to
100 times their weight in blood. So you could see like they are about like a quarter size.
Adela says it's crucial to remove the tick in the first 24 hours. If you don't remove the tick in that window, the bacteria can spread. And then, Adela says, Lyme disease can take hold and be tricky to catch. Many people don't realize they have it.
Unless you have one particular sign that is what we call the bull's eye, it's where the tick bites you. As the bacteria is disseminating in your skin, it produces an inflammatory reaction. So you see redness, like a circle that is red. And this process takes some time because there are changes that happen in the tick.
And while they're feeding, molecules in their saliva trick your body's immune system.
So imagine like when you have a cut, you have a lot of immune cells that come and try to fix where the cut is, right? In the case of the tick tells them, hey, I want to feed, so stop. You're not fixing anything.
Like Jedi mind tricks.
Yeah, like Yoda telling them something like, fix cut not, something like that.
We mostly think about this as an East Coast problem, but... So I'm scared of ticks. I'm so glad you said that they're mostly in the Northeast because I live in the Pacific Northwest.
Oh, well, you have another one over there. So
no!
The species that you have will be Ixodes pacificus.
Ticks are all over the country. Some ticks and the Lyme and other diseases they carry, they've started popping up in unusual places. Take the black-legged tick. It's expanding through the Northeast, Upper Midwest, and Mid-Atlantic. One place they're not, Big Thicket National Preserve in Texas. Which is exactly why Adela's comparing ticks from Big Thicket to ticks in, say, Minnesota. She wants to understand why Lyme disease infections are rising with the spread of these black-legged ticks and not with the ones in Big Thicket. It starts with how ticks find their hosts.
Ticks have this behavior that is called questing. That's how they get into their host. And this questing behavior, what it is ticks go up into the vegetation, like a piece of grass, something that they go up to, and then they start waving their front legs. Then as the host passes, they latch with the front legs, and that's how they get into a host.
Adela found that this questing process is different depending on where the ticks live.
In Minnesota, they will go up to the top of the vegetation and start doing the questing, start waving their legs from side to side. The ones here in Texas don't do that. And we believe that is because it's so hot here that they would lose too much water if they weren't up in the vegetation. So they are staying low in the vegetation. So when a human is going hiking, all happy into the trails, they are less likely to encounter ticks if they do it here in Texas than if you do it up north in the Northeast or in Minnesota.
Adela also says black-legged ticks in Texas feed on lizards, which are less likely than small rodents to get infected with the bacteria that causes Lyme disease. If fewer ticks are infected, they're less likely to transmit the disease to humans later.
In Minnesota, you can find up to 50% of the ticks infected with something. Here in Texas, the infection rates are a lot lower.
This difference in how they act isn't the only thing contributing to the spread of ticks and tick-borne diseases.
Global warming, changes in human behavior, and also the way that we are killing the predators that will normally keep deer and mouse population down. Because if they are not hosts for the ticks to feed on, then the population of the ticks do not thrive.
Black-legged ticks tend to like hotter, more humid climates. So as climate change intensifies, we might see longer tick seasons. Add in a growing population headed out to the suburbs.
Before, we tended to live in like cities only. Now we're living in suburban areas. So we are coming into the areas where the ticks are. So you can go to your backyard and actually get ticks in your backyard.
Recently, because of her large body of work, the United States Department of Agriculture awarded Adela a grant to start developing a vaccine for cattle to protect against the cattle fever tick. Her ultimate goal is to create a vaccine that will protect humans from ticks too.
And once we see what proteins and what candidates work with cattle, it will be a proof of concept that we can do this. We can kill ticks feeding on a vertebrate animal. to then move into humans, developing a vaccine that will prevent tick feeding on humans and the spread of different pathogens in humans.
This episode was produced and fact-checked by Rachel Carlson. It was edited by Rebecca Ramirez. The audio engineer for this episode was Andy Huther. Before we head out, a quick shout-out to our Shortwave Plus listeners. We appreciate you, and thank you for being a subscriber. Shortwave Plus helps support our show, and if you're a regular listener, we'd love for you to join so you can enjoy the show without sponsor interruptions. Find out more at npr.plus.org/shortwave. I'm Regina Barber. Thanks for listening to Shortwave, the daily science podcast from NPR. You just gave me a masterclass in medical entomology.
I teach a whole class if you want to take it.
Maybe I do. I don't have to now. I just aced it.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from EasyCater, committed to helping companies, from nonprofits to the Fortune 500, solve food for work. From ordering online for meetings and team lunches to managing food spend for your whole organization, EasyCater can help you simplify your corporate catering needs. Over 100,000 restaurants nationwide, plus budgeting tools and payment by invoice. Learn more at EasyCater.com. Support for NPR and the following message come from BlackRock's podcast, The Bid. On the latest episode of The Bid, BlackRock's chairman and CEO, Larry Fink, discusses challenges facing investors such as retirement and others where the global capital markets figure into the solutions. Listen to the episode on The Bid and subscribe for market insights from BlackRock's thought leaders.
Why is everyone so obsessed with traditional wives or trad wives on social media? This week, we're talking about the viral videos of women making marshmallows and mozzarella from scratch, and how behind the sheen of calm kitchens and cute fits, there's some interesting pessimism about our modern world. And that's worth digging into. Next time on It's Been a Minute from NPR.